Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Lethal Injection Protocol Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 29, 2015, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Glossop v. Gross. This case concerned three questions. The first was whether it is constitutional for a state to execute an inmate by administering a three-drug protocol in which A, there is some scientific agreement that the first drug does not sufficiently relieve pain or consistently render a person in a deep state of unconsciousness. B, there is a substantial risk that administration of the second and third drugs would cause significant pain to a still conscious prisoner. The second question was whether the plurality stay standard of Bays v. Rees is applicable when states are using a different execution protocol than the one involved in Bays v. Rees. The third question was whether, if a state's protocol for lethal injection will violate the Eighth Amendment, the legal duty to propose a different drug falls upon the prisoner. In an opinion written by Justice Alito, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that the prisoners failed to establish a likelihood of success on the merits of their claim that the administration of midazolam as the first drug in a three-drug execution protocol violates the Eighth Amendment. The court also held that to prevail on an Eighth Amendment method of execution claim, the prisoner is required to prove that the protocol creates a demonstrated risk of severe pain and that the risk is substantial relative to available alternatives. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia, Kennedy, and Thomas joined the opinion of the court. Justice Scalia filed a concurring opinion, which Justice Thomas joined. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion, which Justice Scalia joined. Justice Breyer filed a dissenting opinion, which Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Kagan joined. The judgment of the Tenth Circuit was affirmed. To discuss the case, we have Kent S. Scheidegger, who is legal director and general counsel at the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Scheidegger.
So yesterday, the Supreme Court returned once again to the question of methods of executing the death penalty. As a little bit of background, there has been an evolution of these methods from hanging in the early part of the century, or the Republic, to the gas chamber and the electric chair, which were adopted as supposedly less painful than hanging. And then lethal injection came in fairly recently in our history, mostly in the 1980s and so around that era. And that, again, was thought to be a better, more humane, less painful method of executing the death penalty. Some states adopted it for that reason, and some adopted it simply to get rid of the litigation that was coming in, trying to stop executions based on the gas chamber or the electric chair methods. The method adopted in every state initially was a three-drug method pioneered in Oklahoma, where the first drug was a sedative, sodium thiopental, and then the second drug was a paralytic, and the third drug was potassium chloride, a simple chemical which stopped the heart and actually caused the death. That went along fine for a number of years until the mid-2000s, when it came under attack on the theory that if the first sedative drug was not properly administered, the second and third drugs would be extremely painful. That went to the U.S. Supreme Court in the case called Bays versus Rees, which was decided in 2008, but which had no majority opinion. The plurality opinion accepted the defendant's, that is the challenger's, view that a method of execution could be attacked with reference to available alternatives. And the alternative, they said, was to simply use a single massive dose of barbiturate to both anesthetize and cause death, which is in fact the way animals are put to sleep by veterinarians every day. So the standard set forth by the plurality was that the method being attacked had a substantial risk of serious pain, and secondly, that that risk could be significantly reduced by the alternative being proposed. They found that the petitioners in that case had not met that standard, and the three-drug method was upheld. That went along okay for a couple more years, but then there was a cutoff of the drug being used as the sedative, first sodium thiopental and then pentobarbital. The problem was that the drug market had become internationalized. These drugs were either made in Europe or under the control of European countries, and those companies under pressure from European governments had cut off the supply to the state departments of corrections. As a result, states went looking for other drugs, and the states of Florida and Oklahoma adopted a method where they would use the same three-drug method that was at issue in Bayes, but they would substitute a drug called midazolam for the first sedative drug. So the defendants, or the plaintiffs in the civil case, attacked this protocol, saying midazolam was not up to the job. And they had their experts saying that it's not an approved drug for use in major surgery where there's going to be otherwise extreme pain. It does not put the defendant into a coma-like state, as the drug at issue in Bayes did. And it would not necessarily keep him unconscious. The odd thing about the expert testimony for the challengers was that they never directly addressed the key issue as stated in Bayes. That is, they never said that the executed inmate was sure or very likely to be in extreme pain under this procedure. And curiously, neither of the opinions in Glossop brought out that variation between the testimony and the standard. So the majority opinion had a couple things to resolve. The first one was whether they should treat the standard in the plurality opinion in Bayes as the definitive and authoritative standard to be applied in this case. All of the lower courts to consider this issue up until this case had considered the plurality opinion from Bayes to be controlling. The plurality set out the standard that it set, and Justices Thomas and Scalia had opined that it was even more generous to the state than that. So under the Supreme Court's usual method of applying its plurality opinions, I think the Bayes plurality was the definitive controlling standard, and that is what the majority said. Justice Sotomayor challenged that in the dissent, but that's not really her strongest point. So then they go on to the risk of available alternatives step of the analysis, and they found that the defendants had not come up with an alternative that was available to the state. The challengers said that sodium thiopental would be better, pentobarbital would be better, but these alternatives were not actually available given the boycott by the manufacturers. By imposing the alternative requirement, that effectively knocked out the challenge, and that is the most important holding of this case. It's going to make it very, very difficult for anybody challenging a method of execution, and it's going to make it especially difficult and perhaps impossible for anybody whose real purpose is to stop the execution altogether and not simply to avoid pain in execution. And I think in almost all cases, that is the real purpose. The court went on to uphold as an alternative ground a finding by the district court that the challengers had not demonstrated that the use of midazolam presented a substantial risk of extreme pain. That holding, I think, is less precedential. It's basically upholding a district court factual finding saying it's not clearly erroneous. It doesn't say that another district court judge might not find the other way. Lurking in the background is an issue that came up during oral argument. What should the judiciary do when there is a guerrilla war, to use the term used in oral argument, going on to try and stop the execution of the death penalty? If it is the law, if these are judgments of courts that should be carried out, should we facilitate a strategy to prevent our judicial system from carrying out its judgments by such things as manipulating the supply? And I think that's the real implication here. I think that strategy is going to be much more difficult for those trying to carry it out, and I think it's much more likely that court judgments will be executed once they have been fully reviewed through our very extended review process. Well, that's essentially the case. There is another kind of side battle going on. Justice Breyer wrote a very long opinion rehashing all the arguments against the death penalty, and Justice Scalia had a sharp response to that opinion, but that isn't actually the question before the court.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.